This is lesson four of the Abraham study. The title is Freedom for Costly Love, and the text is Genesis 13, 3 through 18. From the Negev, Abram went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt toward Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, "Lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." So Abram moved his tents and went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he built an altar to the Lord. And now the commentary for the lesson. Test time again. As Abram moves back into the land of promise and resettles near Bethel, it seems almost as if he's retracing his steps to the point where his pilgrimage of faith had earlier begun to go awry. He returns to the altar he has built previously and again calls on the name of the Lord in verses 3 and 4 of chapter 13. Soon, another test arises. This new test is occasioned not by the adversity of famine, but rather by the prosperity of Abram's extended family. Abram's nephew, Lot, whose father, Haran, had died years before, for whom Abram has assumed responsibility, has accompanied him during his recent sojourn in Egypt. Lot has returned with Abram to the promised land, and he, too, has acquired much wealth while in Egypt. Now we learn that the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great, it says in verse 6. Quarreling soon arises between the herdsmen of the two men, the vital but limited resources of grazing land and water for their livestock become the focus of this family dispute. How will the conflict be resolved? Will Abram disown his younger kinsmen? Will there be a full-scale range war, similar to the bloody violence of the early American West? We're reminded that practically any experience in life, abundance as well as leanness, can suddenly expose our hearts and put us at the crossroads of faith. The freedom that comes from faith. This potentially explosive family feud is resolved in a way that shows us that Abram has grown in his practical ability to trust the Lord and his promises. In a startling reversal of established social custom, Abram, the older man, actually defers to Lot, who is the younger man. He says to his nephew, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Verses 8 and 9. We should not interpret Abram's generosity as a sign of weakness. As we'll see in our next study, Abram's military might is sufficient to conquer a coalition of kings. Instead, his open-handedness is a sign both of his faith in God's promises and of his love for his nephew. Abram's deference on the one hand is an expression of his faith. After all, the Lord has promised to give the land on which they now live together, not to Lot, but rather to Abraham and his offspring. Thus, Abram reasons, if not even the resident Canaanites will be able to frustrate the promise, neither will his grasping nephew pose a threat. It's only when we have a sense of security that flows from an inward confidence in the Lord that he is for us and is determined to bless us, that we can begin to experience true freedom of heart, freedom to surrender our rights to others, and freedom from the anxious burden of having to fend for ourselves and our relationships. Abram's faith liberates him to say to his nephew, "You may be the one to choose." On the other hand, Abram's generosity is also an expression of his love for Lot. This introduces an important theme that pervades the story of Abram and that's so important for us today. It's the theme of the distinctive relationships that the Lord calls us to have with one another within his covenant and kingdom. Relationships that are marked with the quality of sacrificial love, even when the people we are called to love are deeply flawed, or even more so than we are. Love for others on the horizontal plane must always flow out of faith in the Lord and his promises on the vertical plane. For as John Piper puts it, love is the overflow of our joy in God that gladly meets the needs of others. When faith enables us to relax in God's love and provision for us, we can drop our ingrained competitiveness and extend ourselves and what we have to others. Peace in relationships among brothers and sisters becomes more important than self-assertion and grazing rights. To bring out the necessary connection between faith and love, we may say that Abram's loving relationship with Lot is an evidence of the genuineness of his faith. Every bit as much as his earlier leaving his own country and setting out for the land of Canaan had been. Costly love for others is another one of those works without which, according to Scripture, faith is dead, as we see in James 2:17. It was true for Abram. It must be true for us as well. The key to love is not trying harder in the power of our own flesh. Rather, it's growing in our ability to trust in him. Loving the unlovely. The foregoing thought alone will be challenging enough for most of us. But consider, in addition, that Lot is an extremely difficult person to love. It's clear that he's perfectly content to allow his own herdsmen to quarrel with those of his uncle. In this, he implicitly challenges Abram's position of authority in their relationship. Even though Abram and Sarai have now extended themselves to him and have served as his guardian for many years, Lot is cast, in other words, in the all-too-familiar role of the ungrateful, insubordinate child toward his parents. As the story unfolds, we see that Lot's foolishness is very deeply ingrained and expresses itself in other ways. We're told that Lot looked up and saw the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt toward Zoar. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents towards Sodom, verses 10 through 12. Here's the portrait of a man who acts on the basis of human wisdom and calculation, and who's willing to sacrifice precious things on the altar of his worldly ambition. He willingly removes himself from Canaan, the land of promise, opting to dwell instead among the cities of the plain. He separates himself from Abram, the heir of the promise, who lives under the Lord's blessing. Moreover, he knowingly chooses to dwell among a people known for their open wickedness, as we see in verse 12. In this foolish and tragic decision, Lot both endangers himself spiritually and physically, and sets in motion a train of events that will lead to degradation and destruction within his own family. And yet, for all of Lot's misplaced priorities, self-promoting behavior, and short-sighted folly, Abram recognizes in him a true brother, that is, a kinsman, in verse 8. It is a spiritual as well as a physical kinship that binds them together, for Lot, though his faith is extremely weak, is also a genuine believer in the Lord, and this is made explicit in 2 Peter 2, 6 through 8. For these reasons, Abram is tenaciously committed to his nephew in steadfast love, just as God is committed to Abram in that same love. As the New Testament puts it, "Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another," 1 John 4:11. Again and again throughout his pilgrimage, we'll see Abram extending this sacrificial love to Lot with fairly disappointing results. In this, he models for us the costly, selfless commitment to one another to which God calls us within his kingdom, especially in the case of those who are most difficult to love. More than that, he models for us the tenacious love of the Lord himself. Faith's reward. As Lot packs his bags and moves eastward towards Sodom, the Lord speaks to Abram to confirm his act of faith. "Lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever," verses 14 and 15. God is reassuring his pilgrim that he will never be the loser for the love and generosity he's extended to his nephew. God not only repeats his promise of the land to Abram, but he also actually amplifies it here. In the legal language of the day, the Lord now specifically deeds to his servant all the land in every direction for as far as his eye can see. He also amplifies his promise of a numerous family. This old man and his barren wife will eventually become parents of offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted, verse 16. The Lord then invites Abram to walk through the length and breadth of the land, surveying and claiming in faith the inheritance that he and his children are destined to enjoy forever. Abram now moves his tents to the vicinity of Hebron in southern Canaan and joyfully claims the site for God's kingdom by building another altar to the Lord.